For any who are visiting or weren't here last week, we started a little series on the book of Nehemiah and on this man, on his character, on God's work, in essence, done in God's way. And we only got as far as verse 3 last week. We learned some lessons from the past and why the people of God and indeed Nehemiah was where he was at this particular time. And so we're going to read the chapter this morning and follow on from where we left off last week. God's word says, "The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah, it came to pass in the month of Chislev, in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan the citadel, that Hanani, one of my brethren, came with me from Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews who had escaped, who had survived the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said to me, 'The survivors who are left from the captivity in the province are there in great distress and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem is also broken down, and its gates are burnt with fire.' So it was when I heard these words that I sat down and wept and mourned for many days. I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven. And they said, 'I pray, Lord God in heaven, O great and awesome God, you who keep your covenant and mercy with those who love you and observe your commandments, please let your ear be attentive and your eyes open, that you may hear the prayer of your servant, which I pray before you now, day and night, for the children of Israel, your servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against you, both my father's house and I have sinned. We have acted very corruptly against you and have not kept the commandments, the statutes, nor the ordinances which you commanded your servant Moses. Remember, I pray, the word that you commanded your servant Moses, saying, "If you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the nations. But if you return to me and keep my commandments and do them, though some of you were cast out to the farthest part of the heaven, yet I will gather them from there and bring them to the place which I have chosen as a dwelling for my name. Now these are your servants and your people, whom you have redeemed by your great power and by your strong hand. O Lord, I pray, please let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who desire to fear your name. And let your servant prosper this day, I pray, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man, for I was the king's cupbearer." It's getting near that time of the year when school ends, young people. It's getting near that time when that little letter comes through the door to the parent or guardian of. I used to hate that letter. That letter was the school report. In our day, many of the school reports probably didn't come through the door. In fact, they were sent home with you. I don't know, that's changed now. They were sent home with you, and that was great because some of them never made home. But now they come through the door, so you can do nothing about it. In fact, I read an article where it said that they were now going to stop doing the end of year report and do a weekly online report. I don't know if that would be better or not. We come to this passage today and we see that Nehemiah receives a report. And I looked up some reports of some famous people just out of interest, and this is what they said. Perhaps, young people, none of your reports have been like this. I was amazed at someone. Winston Churchill, it said this here, "He is so regular in his irregularity that I don't really know what to do." Jilly Cooper, the novelist, it was said of her, "Jilly has set herself an extremely low standard, which she has failed to maintain." Richard Briers, the actor, it said, "It would seem that Briers thinks he is running the school and not me. If this attitude persists, one of us will have to leave." Jeremy Paxman, you'll know him, he's a journalist, a Newsnight presenter, it said of him, "Stubbornness is in his nature and could be an asset when directed towards sound ends." Very true. Stephen Fry, "He has glaring faults, and they have certainly glared at us this term." "Well, goodbye, Graves, and remember that your best friend is the waste paper basket." Some tremendous quotes. I'll finish with one. It says Judy Dench, Judy would be a very good pupil if she lived in this world. I don't know, boys and girls or adults, if you've ever had a school report like that. Not very good. The report that Nehemiah received, you will see it in verse 3 and 4. When he asked the people who come from Jerusalem, he asked them what it is like back in Jerusalem for the people and for the place. Nehemiah is concerned about the people of God and about the place of God. He is concerned about the people and the glory of God. And so he asked the question. You know, casual conversations reveals a lot about us. What we will talk about round the dinner table today will reveal a lot about us. And this question that he asked reveals a lot about Nehemiah and his concerns. And he asks about the people, and he asks about the place where God has put his name. Concern for the people and the glory of God. He receives a report, and what we want to do today is a bit of title on this. It is a revealing reaction to a bad report. A revealing reaction to a bad report. He hears the report, you can read it there in verse 3, that the walls are broken down, that the place is burning with fire, that the people are in great distress and reproach. Not a very good report. And his reaction reveals a lot about Nehemiah, the same as our reactions to different situations reveal a lot about us. Just very quickly, please, if you turn to Numbers chapter 13, perhaps one of the greatest reactions and one of the most startling reactions we see in the Bible was in Numbers 13. And especially if you're in any leadership capacity today, reactions are tremendously important. And you might say, well, I'm not in a leadership capacity today. Well, you probably are. You could be in an educational leadership capacity. You could be in a domestic leadership capacity as a parent. You could be in a professional leadership capacity. You could be in a spiritual leadership capacity. So all of us today may be in some situation where we lead other people. And the reaction that Nehemiah has tremendous impact. And the reaction we see in Numbers 13 is one of the most startling reactions in the Bible. And the impact of it was very long term. It is the story you will know of the spies who went out to spy the land. And they come back and they give their report. And the report you will see in verse 27-28, it's a mixture of potential. This land is beautiful. But it's a mixture of problems. Because this land is full of giants. And in verse 29 you will see that the Amalekites are in the south. The Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites are in the mountains. And the Canaanites are by the sea. Basically, the land, though it has great potential, is full of difficult problems. And they start to give this report. And 10 of them are given the report. You can imagine it halfway through it. Caleb stands up, and you will see in verse 30 that Caleb quiets the people and says, let us go up at once and take possession, for you are well able to overcome it. Can you imagine the other men saying to him, Caleb, we're only at the fourth report. Sit down. Let's hear the rest. Let's hear the 10. We're only at number 4. Who do you think you are? But Caleb gives a report dependent upon the God that he knows. And they won't listen to him. And if you read on down, you will see in chapter 14 what the reaction is. The reaction is among the people of God is, verse 1, you will see it, there's crying. Verse 2, you will see there's complaining. Verse 3, you will see, let's pack up and go back. There's returning. Verse 9, you will see there's rebelling against God and his word. And in verse 10, they start to pick up stones to stone the leaders. What a reaction. So 10 men's report has an impact upon the whole community of Israel. Do we realize what our reactions are to different circumstances and what an impact it has upon the people of God. The impact in Caleb and Joshua's day was the fact that none of those generation, apart from those two men, seen the promised land. What an impact. The next generation seen it. But nobody but Caleb and Joshua of that generation. What an impact. What a reaction. What a responsibility for the people of God. And what a responsibility Nehemiah faced. Nehemiah faced chaos in Jerusalem, and there's different things we can do with chaos. Some people thrive in chaos. You can see them in the workplace, can't you? They just love chaos. They love getting involved and sorting it out and doing this and doing that. Some people hide from chaos. They just bury their heads in the sand and want to get away from it. Some people take inventory of chaos, don't they? And they almost make it a spiritual gift of informing you of chaos. That's what the ten did. They had a list of all the difficulties. They informed the people about it, and the people cried and complained and wanted to go back to where they'd been. We want to look at Nehemiah's reaction. It's a very revealing reaction. And the first thing that Nehemiah does, I want you to look with me, because Nehemiah looks out in benevolence. Nehemiah looks out in benevolence, and you will see it. So it was when I heard these words that I sat down and wept and mourned for many days. I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven. Nehemiah looks out at this nation, looks out at this city, and he looks out with care and concern, and he weeps. Wonder, do you weep? When was the last time you wept for the people of God or the place of God? Or are we more the stiff upper lip people who never cry? Do you cry at old movies? Do you cry at Britain's Got Talent when a little girl or boy shows tremendous talent totally out of the blue, and you can see in the crowd people's tears starting to well up? Do we cry? Young people, I once had a friend many years ago, and he took this girl on her first date to see a movie. It wasn't really an old movie. But he says as the movie progressed, it was quite sad, and he could feel the tears starting to well up in his eyes. Before it was over, he says, I had cried my eyes out. And the girl had sat there motionless. He says, I had no tissues in my pocket. He says, at the end of the movie, I had to get out and go to the bathroom and get tissues to clear my eyes up. And you know, we never let him forget that. Cried his eyes out at this movie. And the girl sat there. Never worked out in the end. But you know what? Do we ever weep about the people of God? Or the state of the place of God? It's very revealing, isn't it? Nehemiah was concerned about these people. You know, if you're going to weep, you're the sort of person who's more concerned with others than you are with yourself. Nehemiah lived in a palace. He lived in opulence. He lived in prosperity. He lived among magnificent buildings. He lived among spacious gardens. And yet his heart is for the people of God in a run-down and demoralized city. That's where his heart was. He was not preoccupied with himself. And so often I feel, maybe I'm wrong, in the Christian community, we're so preoccupied with ourselves and our needs that we miss out on the people who really need Jesus Christ and who need the help of God. Caught up in what we need. Caught up in what we want. Now, I was amazed to read the story, and perhaps some of you will know it, about a man called Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was a pastor. He was a martyr. He was a spy during the Second World War. As Adolf Adolf Hitler seduced a nation and bullied a continent and attempted to exterminate the Jews of Europe, there was a small number of dissidents and saboteurs who tried to dismantle the Third Reich from within. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was one of those men. Dietrich Bonhoeffer in 1939, as a young man, was in America, just as the war is about to start. And this is what he writes. "I have had time to think and to pray about my situation and that of my nation, and to have God's will clarified for me. I have come to the conclusion that I have made a mistake in coming to America. I must live through this difficult period of our national history with the Christian people of Germany. I shall have no right to participate in the reconstruction of Christian life in Germany after the war if I do not share the trials of this time with my people. My brothers in the Confessing Synod wanted me to go. They may have been right in urging me to do so, but I was wrong in going. Such a decision each man must make for himself. Christians in Germany will face the terrible alternative of either willing the defeat of their nation in order that Christian civilization may survive, or willing the victory of the nation and thereby destroying our civilization. I know which of these alternatives I must choose, but I cannot make that choice in security." Dietrich Bonhoeffer left America, and he went back to Germany, and he eventually paid for his life because he was concerned for the people of God in his nation, in a country that was about to be at war and eventually defeated and demolished. Same as Nehemiah. Nehemiah wasn't preoccupied with himself. He looks out and he says, there's people out there and they need me. You know, God's call didn't come to Nehemiah, you can read it, didn't come in the words that you hear it coming to Elijah. The word of God came to Elijah. It wasn't sort of an assertion of the divine initiative. It was more discerned through an awareness of need. And he decided to serve. The decision was made for him. You ever been there? You ever been in a situation where you see a circumstance of need and you say, I must meet it? Or are we around and decide and debate and wonder what the will of God is? Or we say there's a need and I must meet that for God and for his glory and for his people? Nehemiah looks out in benevolence. Secondly, I want you to notice that Nehemiah looks up independence. You'll read there at the end of verse 4, "I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven, and I said, I pray, Lord God of heaven, O great and awesome God," which we've been singing about, "you who keep your covenant and mercy with those who love you and observe your commandments, please let your ear be attentive and your eyes open." Nehemiah doesn't rush to meet the need. We live in a very instant world, don't we? The world of email, the world of text, the world of instant messaging, the world that solutions must be resolved straight away. And Nehemiah's first and immediate reaction is to go in to the presence of God. Is that yours and mine? The difficulties that we face, the problems we come across, do we initially rush to resolve them, or do we go into the presence of God and take them to him? Between chapter 1, verse 1 and chapter 2, verse 1, there is a period of about 90 to 120 days, 3 to 4 months, and yet the whole project to build the walls took 52 days. And Nehemiah spent more time taking the issue to God that he needed actually completing the project. I want to say this. Someday you will look back on the things that you did rationally in the flesh, and you will hate the day that you did them. Prayer is absolutely essential, especially
in the life of any leader. And he goes to God in dependence.
You know, his problem is 800 miles away. And if anything is going to be done 800 miles away, it's unrealistic unless God does it. And so he goes to God. Let me ask the question today. Do you pray? Do you plan to pray? Do you have a prayer diary? You might say, well, this is getting round to beating the big bass drum about prayer meetings. Well, that would be good, but that's not what it is. But if we want God to work, or you want God to work in your life, you will have to spend time with God in prayer. You know, in the passage we read in Numbers, or looked at in Numbers, Moses went to God on behalf of the people of God, and God said this, I have pardoned according to your word. Isn't that amazing? That God was moved by the prayers of Nehemiah. And God works through our prayers. No, we don't understand all of that. We don't understand sometimes we hold in tension God's sovereignty and man's responsibility. But God tells us to pray. And that's a good enough reason. And he works through our prayers. We don't have time to look at it all, but you'll see that Nehemiah was committed in prayer and he was confident in prayer. He says he spent many days. It says he was fasting. Those days, Nehemiah was the cupbearer. He had access to the kitchens. He had access to the kitchens of the palace. He could have any food he wanted to. Meals in those days were not the rushed affairs of contemporary life. There were affairs where you spent time sitting around, talking, communicating. And Nehemiah gave all of that up to spend time with God in prayer. He was serious. And he was committed. Jim Reeves, young people, you'll not remember Jim Reeves. And I particularly don't remember Jim Reeves either, to be honest with you. But he had a song and it said this. How long has it been since you talked with the Lord and told him your heart's hidden secrets? How long since you prayed? How long since you stayed on your knees till the dawn broke through? That's challenging, isn't it? Very challenging. Committed. He was confident. You will see there, he talks about the God of heaven. As we said, he is in Jerusalem. He is in Susa. The problem is in Jerusalem. A tale of two cities, one rich, one's poor. One's strong, one's weak. One's proud, one's broken. But both are like specks of dust under the vast canopy of God's heaven. Both. You know, Nehemiah would have been familiar with these words, the God of heaven. He would have seen them back in history in Jehoshaphat. The God said to him, the battle is not yours but mine. He would have seen it in Jonah's life when Jonah confessed on the run from God that he followed the God of heaven. Is that you today? Are you on the run from God? Are you facing the battle? He would have heard it in Daniel, in the stories of Daniel in captivity. When Daniel said to Nebuchadnezzar, when all his wizards of the day couldn't answer his dreams and his problems, Daniel said, the God of heaven can do that. And that is true today. All the wizards of today can't answer the ultimate questions of your life today. Only God, the God of heaven, can do that. And Nehemiah was confident. Are we confident today that we have a great God? That we have an awesome God? And Nehemiah looked up in dependence. Thirdly, I want you to look with me, please, that Nehemiah looked in with penitence. You know, having spent time, and we can't really look at it, he talks about the God who is a covenant-keeping God, a God who keeps his promises, a God who is compassionate. You will see that the God is a speaking God and a listening God. And being in the very presence of that God causes Nehemiah to realize what he is like and what the people of God have been like. Time spent with God allows him to see himself for who he is. And a reflection of God's character brought an awareness to Nehemiah of unforgiven sin in his own life. You know, John McEnroe, the famous Wimbledon champion, used to, words that he was famed for was, "You cannot be serious." Nehemiah was serious. He was serious about his relationship with God and with others. Are we? You know, we meet this morning, we do not exist to listen to sermons and to go through the motions. We meet because we're serious to meet with God. And Nehemiah was serious. Very quickly, you will see, notice his intensity. It said there that he was serious about his sin day and night. He was haunted by the recollection of the people's failures to honor God. And he was serious to deal with it. Not only his intensity, notice his honesty. There's a real sense of realism about Nehemiah. If you read those verses, in verses 6 through to 8 to 7, you will see, notice the words "we" and "I." The confession that Nehemiah makes was not only on behalf of the people of Israel, but for his own sin. He wasn't even there when they were carried away to Babylon, was he? He's never even been there. And yet he says, "I'm involved." And Nehemiah's confession was that Nehemiah was not only seeking to be part of the solution, Nehemiah was part of the problem. Now, what do we do with our sin? Are we serious about it? You know, right back at the beginning of time, what we usually do is we usually blame the other person. Is that what Adam and Eve did? And even get to the point of blaming God. We usually think of 6 or 7 ways the other person has manifested their stubbornness and unwillingness to change, but we seldom consider our part in the problem. But it works both ways. Nehemiah says, "I am culpable before God." Husband and wife in the home. Parent and child in the home. Pupil and teacher at school. Boss and employee in the workplace. Member and member in the church. As you go before God in prayer about unresolved conflicts, have the attitude that reflects these words: "Lord, I bring before you the areas where I have caused an irritation. This is my realm of responsibility. I can't change him, but God, I can tell you that this is my part in it. Forgive me." That's Nehemiah's attitude. Intensity. Honesty. Look at his urgency. You will see it, verse 6b and verse 7. You'll notice the words, "which we have sinned against you, both my father's house and I have sinned. We have acted very corruptly against you. I've not kept the commandments, the statutes, and the ordinances which you commanded your servant Moses." I want you to notice, please, with me, that sin was not merely a refusal to obey certain rules which harm the life of an individual or a community of God's people. It was a defiant act of personal rebellion against God. And that's why it's so serious. And that's why it's so urgent. It was like David and Bathsheba, wasn't it? David had sinned against Bathsheba. He had sinned against Uriah. He had sinned against the men who he sent to the front line. But in Psalm 51, he says, I have sinned against you and you only. Sin was against God. And that's why it's so urgent. So he looks in with penitence. Very quickly, he looks back with assurance. You'll see it in verses 8 and 9. And he says, remember, I pray, the word that you commanded your servant Moses, saying, if you're unfaithful, I will scatter you among the nations. But if you return to me and keep my commandments and do them, though some of you were cast out to the farthest part of the heavens, yet I will gather them from there and bring them to the place which I have chosen as a dwelling place to my name. Nehemiah does not wallow in a prolonged, introspective examination of his failures and those of others, does he? We often do, don't we? And that is what the devil would want us to do. He wants us to dwell on our own failures, and he wants us to look out and dwell on other people's failures, and Nehemiah does neither. He brings them to God, and then he looks back on two great promises, two great unchanging historical realities of God, what God said and what God did. What God said, Revelation. You look at it, verse 8 and 9. He recalls the promises of God to Moses. You will see them in Deuteronomy. You will see them in Leviticus, that if the people sin, God would scatter them. And he's able to say, God, that is true. Hey, that is where we are now. That is true. What you promised has happened. I don't know where you're at today. Maybe the walls of your life have crumbled like the walls of Jerusalem. You know, it's getting near that time of year again where you go out and you start doing the garden and you find out all the problems, don't you? There's things falling here and there's things growing there and there's bits falling off this and there's bits falling all that. I hate this time of year. Maybe the walls of your life are like that through neglect. Maybe first a little bit of stone fell out of your wall. Maybe the weeds started to grow in the wall. Maybe a little bit fell out and then the mortar collapsed and maybe the whole wall's crumbled down. Yes, it looks good on the outside, but maybe your wall, your spiritual life, is completely crumbled down. Maybe you're like the people in this portion where they're scattered. Or maybe today you're just scattered because of the difficulties of life. Nehemiah probably felt in these verses that he was at the farthest part of the world, as the verses said. Maybe you're sitting at home shut in today and you feel far from God. Maybe you're in a hospital ward and you feel at the farthest part of the world. Maybe you're looking after ill loved ones. Or maybe you're just spiritually distant. Well, I love the promise. The revelation was that I will scatter, but then it says I will gather. And the promise of God was that he would build these people again and bring them back. And Nehemiah faced political problems. He faced human obstacles. He faced natural difficulties. But the promise of forgiveness and restoration, despite all the potential pitfalls, encouraged Nehemiah from the past to face the future. And you will notice not only the revelation, but the redemption. You know, in verse 10, it says that, now these are your servants and your people who you have redeemed and by your great power and your strong hand. God has done it before, hasn't he? He brought them out of Egypt. He redeemed them. He promised to bring them back. Great encouragement to those who are in difficult situations today. You know, on Bank Holiday Monday, there was on TV the DreamWorks presentation of the Prince of Egypt. We watched a little bit of it. It brought home to you the reality of the Exodus. It brought home to you the reality of God sending the angel and taking away the firstborn of all the Egypt, but it brought home the reality of the blood upon the doorposts that saved the people of Israel. What a tremendous redemption. What a tremendous promise for those who are struggling today. God has done it in the past,
and he can do it in the future. And we'll finish. We're not going to go through this point, but you will see that he looks forward with confidence. Verse 11. That was all well and good for the past, but Nehemiah needed help now. Augustine once said, it is the present that bites so sharply. Isn't that true for all of us? Nehemiah needed help now, and so he goes to prayer before he goes to the king. Like Moses spent 40 years in the wilderness. Jesus spent many years in the carpenter's warehouse. Paul spent years in Arabia. Nehemiah had spent time with God before he goes to the king. He's going to ask the man to change his mind about a project that was once forbidden in the past. But the words of Proverbs come to mind. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord like the rivers of water. He turns it wherever he wishes. Sometimes we think we're the answer. Our phone call. Our words. We think we are the answer. We're not. We're only part of it. God is the answer. And Nehemiah prays for success before this man. Young people, older people, do we ever pray for success before God in this way? Listen, Lord, make me successful. Make me find the place at the center of your will, whatever that level that may be. May I reach the maximum so that I am, in your eyes, prosperous. Doesn't mean your grades are all A's. Doesn't mean your wallet's always full. But it means you're at the center of God's will for you. You know, Nehemiah recognized the need. He got involved. He took it to God. He was available. You know, a genuine leader is not marked by success at times. He's marked by diligent faithfulness in the midst of a task. He may not be fantastic or innovative, but he's faithful. Available and personally involved. Charles Swindoll, we'll finish with this. Pastor and author, was once in the U.S. Marine Corps, and he said this. During my days in the Marine Corps, we were often told that a captain stays with his company and the squad leader stays with his squad. As the intensity of the battle increased, the more his presence means. What's her name? I was. There was no leadership by proxy. Now, Nehemiah was faithful, available, and personally involved. Are you?